Yesterday, the UN Security Council passed a resolution condemning sexual violence in war. Should not have been a controversial vote, but the resolution was only approved after language referring to sexual and reproductive health was taken out. The U.S. delegation had threatened to veto the measure, in line with the Trump administration's opposition to any official document that even implies support for abortion. Amanda Klassing co-directs the Women's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch.
Rape as a weapon of war is something that has been documented over the last few decades, but is certainly pervasive. It's when the parties to a conflict have used sexual violence to instill terror, to really try to break social fabrics and try to humiliate and harm civilian populations. You see this when women are fleeing from conflict. You may see it when military try to occupy a community. We also have seen the knock-on effects of this type of violence can last decades.
How did this resolution, at least in the eyes of the White House, Amanda, imply support for abortion?
Surprisingly, they have just read into every mention of sexual and reproductive health and rights the idea of abortion. When we talk about sexual and reproductive health and rights, particularly for victims of sexual violence, what we're talking about is the broad range of services that are needed for somebody who's been raped. That includes access to emergency contraception, prophylaxis so that they don't have sexually transmitted infections. And in some cases, that might mean access to abortion or prenatal care if they choose to continue a pregnancy.
I mean, they ultimately signed the resolution. How watered down was the language?
They actually removed all language related to reproductive health and also removed a paragraph that refers to an earlier UN Security Council resolution that talks about sexual and reproductive health and rights.
So what does the resolution actually say now, and practically what does that mean on the ground for women who end up in that horrific situation?
So the resolution looks at a broad range of issues, including accountability for acts of sexual violence and conflict. In practice, the resolutions that previously exist still hold true. But what it means is that governments won't feel as compelled to make commitments to ensure that all range of services are available to victims of sexual violence and conflict.
So the original resolution was submitted by Germany. How did they react to the change and other countries that wanted to have the original language?
Germany was in a really difficult position with the U.S. actually flexing its veto. They had to choose whether or not to remove this language or to see the whole resolution die, essentially. And so they conceded to this language. It certainly is a step back from global consensus around what it is women who have been raped in war deserve to access after they've had such a terrible thing happen.
Why did Russia and China abstain from this vote?
They abstained from the vote related to some other issues within the resolution. China was concerned about language about women human rights defenders, and Russia did not agree to language regarding LGBT rights.
So how much weight does this resolution actually carry? Is it another non-binding symbolic statement from the UN, or do you think there are real teeth in this?
I think the biggest concern here is that we have seen over the last couple of years a broad global attack on women's rights. And the UN has really been a challenging place to reassert global consensus on women's rights. So it's reflective of the power that the Trump administration has to really influence backtracking on women's rights. And you see, it's not just in conflict, but as we see rising authoritarianism, rising populism, it's often the women's rights activists that are kind of in the front line of being attacked. When we have countries like the United States allying with other countries like Russia and Saudi Arabia to try to roll back women's rights, it really puts women on the front lines at risk and leaves them alone.
Amanda Klassing with Human Rights Watch speaking with us from Washington. Thank you very much.
Thank you.